Support staff of Parliament, I suggest that we start the business of the day this morning. Maybe we could start off by just having a moment of silence, of prayer and meditation. Amen. It's the time of the year where we need to engage the department, honorable members, with respect to their state plans at AEPP and get informed in terms of the alignment with the instruments that are normally used to develop the AEPP. But maybe before we proceed, let me acknowledge the new member of the committee that is replacing Honorable Saki. I will not be able maybe to pronounce your surname properly, but you are Moshodi. You are welcome. We anticipate that you are going to be having a fruitful engagement. Your cooperation and input support is going to be highly appreciated by the committee. Thank you very much. You are at home. Cape Town is just as good as the state. The event you face. Thank you. We are also going to draw from your experience, because previously you were a member of this committee in any way. Okay, thanks. Let's proceed. I don't think there is a need for introductions. We already know one another. We've been engaging a couple of times before now. So I would really love us to proceed. Maybe just by way of opening the remarks before we do the apologies, or let us do the apologies. I've received an apology from the Minister of Public Education. She has written a letter to apologize. As you know, that our committee sits on Wednesdays, which is a cabinet day, so she would not be available. I also received an apology of the DG. Apparently, he is not within the country. Is traveling, therefore he will not be able to be part of our proceedings. Those are the only apologies that I can remember. I don't know if there are any others. Honorable Ramburu is on sick leave. I think I explained earlier that she is on sick leave. We are not sure when she is going to be coming back. That is the eve of the committee. Okay, we would then proceed and say that we welcome the department for this engagement. We are well aware that the department is responsible for the first outcome out of the 14 outcomes. And we are well aware of the vision of the department that is encapsulated in the third plan to ensure that people access lifelong learning, education and training. And that these are opportunities that are meant to ensure that they improve the quality of life of the people that you serve. That will lead to building a peaceful and a prosperous and a democratic South Africa that we all aspire for. There is also a need that, because this is a concurrent function, that we work not only with the national department, but because we represent provinces, we have got a direct interest in terms of whether the provinces are supported adequately by the national department with regards to their delivery of services. So one would anticipate that as the department engages, they'll give us a clear perspective of how the provinces have been planned for and what is going to be done in order to support those that are having challenges and difficulties. Let me hand over this opportunity to the Deputy Minister to give us his opening remarks and give us a picture of how the services are going to be rolled out during this financial year in a nutshell, and how they are coping with the challenges that are there as we speak. Over to you, Deputy Minister. Thank you very much for your presence. You are always with us and supporting, and we really do appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson and esteemed members. It's good to be back again with the NCOP, and I also would like to extend a warm welcome to the new member of the committee. Chairperson, my minister would have very, very much liked to have been here. In fact, she gave me an assurance that even if Cabinet is sitting, she would join the portfolio committee. The only difficulty is it's sitting in Pretoria, so she's unable to excuse herself for the time. Otherwise, she would have spent some time with you, and she's asked me to convey her best wishes to you and the members of the committee and apologize profusely. The DG, as you correctly pointed out, is born abroad for international obligations, and the acting DG, Temba Pojana, was seated on my left-hand side. Vivian, who's on my right-hand side, was very known. It was known to everybody, and daughter of Mother City, Western Cape, will be doing the presentation. And I would like to introduce to you a new member, a senior member, the Deputy Director General of responsible for curriculum. She has been formally appointed. Cabinet has approved the appointment. It's Dr. Maboya, and she will be now heading the branch that the former DG was heading previously, a very, very important task, but I can assure you that we have somebody who is very, very skilled and competent in the area that is entrusted to her. Well, Ms. Carlson is going to do the presentation, and what I thought I should do is perhaps just give you a perspective of the journey that we've traveled. In other words, what is the narrative in terms of education? Where are we? Where were we? And where are we? And is there cause for celebration or is there cause for anxiety? I thought we should start off with early childhood development because I know you, Chairperson, in particular, are very, very, very focused in that particular area, and we certainly endorse your sentiments regarding the importance of early childhood development. Now, although it does not fall within our purview, the Department of Social Development is responsible for learners of children between 0 and 4 years of age. And what we can celebrate to you is that between 2002 and 2014, the number of children that receive early childhood development training in the ECD facilities has increased from 8% to 48%. So currently, certainly in the vicinity of about 60%. So that's a huge, huge stride that we have made. With regard to Great Art participation, it's quite remarkable that in 2002, we were at 40%. We are now almost universal, if not there already. In other words, we have more than 875,000 children who are in Great Art. And what the Statistics South Africa in terms of the household survey has indicated is that 92% of all children in South Africa have had at least 1 year of preschool learning, which is a remarkable progress, and I think it's a good cause to celebrate. With regard to access, I think we have good cause to celebrate for between 7 and 13 years. There we are at 99%, the highest on the continent and perhaps amongst the highest in the world. And that's a good cause for celebration. However, the challenge that we face in that area is particularly for between the grades 10 and 12, the GET band. And there are several causes for that, amongst which is teenage pregnancy, repetition that has occurred in progression without adequate support, and a lack of confidence in terms of the process. Although the numbers have diminished quite significantly, we still do believe that there is much more that we have to do in that particular area. So between 14 to 18 years old, we were at 88%. We've now increased it to 91% in 2014, and currently we are at about 93%. What is very, very encouraging is that our girl learners, both in terms of access and retention, are doing better than our boy learners. Also in terms of the quality of their passes. In fact, they surpass the boy learners by far. So that's a good cause for celebration, and cheer, I'm sure, given the importance of gender parity, that is something that we should celebrate, and recognizing the reality of yesteryear. Now, we pay particular attention to inclusive education and learners with disability. You are aware, and you've received a report previously, that sign language is formally part of the curriculum, that we provided Braille workbooks to partially sighted learners, and that we are utilizing ICT. In this regard, we work very, very closely with the Department of Social Development and the Presidency responsible for women and children. So our applications are made available to those departments that are able to provide resources for learners with disability. And what is encouraging is that 84% of five-year-olds with disabilities are now within the system as of 2014. And that there, too, for us is significant. However, the challenges persist with regard to trained professionals for deaf learners, and we're doing so on a massive basis, and also basically for partially sighted or blind learners. We will have to continue to attract people to do that particularly important task on our behalf, but what we've learned is that only by recognizing the problem and recognizing that you have not gone far enough are you able to make the appropriate intervention. So the number of out-of-school children in 2002 was 300,000 men. In 300,000, I don't know why I'm talking about men, maybe the economy itself. And it has been reduced to less than 100,000 learners in 2014. The complaints with regard to our surveys have diminished significantly in terms of education. And whilst we do have the complaints here and there with regard to textbooks that might not have been delivered or with regard to other problems, but in terms of the system as a whole, we are encouraged by the fact that people are seeing the tangible difference in their learning and teaching environment. Now, 95% of the youth between 15 and 24 have completed grade 7 and higher. More female youth have completed grade 7 and higher, and 84% of adults age 20 and above have completed grade 7. Just in terms of our curriculum program, we have made more than 3 million adults functionally literate and numerate, and I think that is the program that has yielded positive results, but we are in the process of mopping up and closing that program. Now, infrastructure continues to be a problem, and indeed what we can share with you is that we have already delivered 138 state-of-the-art schools across the country. Most of them are in the Eastern Cape, given the fact that they are, the phenomenon of mud schools has been eliminated in the other provinces, but persists in the Eastern Cape. But the Western Cape has also been the beneficiary. It has also already received more than 17 state-of-the-art schools. When I say state-of-the-art schools, it has all the facilities, ICT, library, laboratory, playing fields, dance rooms, and you spend more than 35 million in the schools. And these in the Western Cape are in the historically poor areas where the population, the learner population, is principally coloured and African. And it's quite remarkable. I was just in Dunoon last week where we gave 2,000 hampers. More than 1,500 learners are attending school there. And if you look at the socioeconomic context and the levels of poverty, you understand why such an institution becomes a beacon of hope for our people. So on average, we've been delivering a school per week. And the plans for this coming financial year, Chairperson, is quite interesting. The Eastern Cape alone will be the recipient of 55 new state-of-the-art schools. So that should be some comfort, given particularly the challenges that we face in the Eastern Cape with regard to education. With regard to the national school program, it's important to note the significant progress that we've made. Not very long ago, in fact less than a decade ago, about a decade ago, we were feeding less than 2 million children. and then two, we were doing so only on the 3 days of the school week, and we were only doing so in the primary school. We now do so across the board, contact 1, 2, and 3, and 9.3 children are being fed every day. That's quite phenomenal. 9.3 million children are being fed every day, and I thought it's something that we could celebrate. With regard to curriculum reform, and you know, Vivian, Ms. Carlton will give you greater details, but I think the important thing is we've recognized that there was too much emphasis placed on the academic stream. And now everybody wanted to go to university. We didn't pay adequate attention to the intermediate skills that the country desperately required. And we also perhaps thought that that could be carried out by the TVETs, the Technical Vocation Education Training Centers. Indeed, the TVETs have done extremely well, although it does not fall within our purview. They've increased within 5 years by more than 500,000, so that's quite remarkable. However, we potentially have 2,000 technical schools. We've recapitalized the schools, and this year we have introduced the vocational streams in engineering, electrical engineering, mechanical engineering, and civil engineering, as well as technology. Important that we do so, and the deputy ministers have the benefit of attending both these training sessions in Gauteng as well as in the Free State, where we could see just the excitement of the educators, forget the learners, was quite remarkable, and that is occurring. We basically developed, procured, and distributed the textbooks, and next year, even better news. The third stream is being introduced, and the third stream would be on occupation. The smaller courses, so you've got your vocational stream and your occupational stream. And in order to achieve this, we had to really look at the model of the content of our mathematics and science. So what we could use in the curriculum is a technical mathematics and a technical science that would be appropriate for learners who are pursuing this particular area. And Chair, I must say that we think the three streams model will work very well, and in doing so, we are working very, very closely with the Department of Higher Education and Training so that we complement and augment the work that they are doing, and we do not compete or create this juncture between our vision and theirs. Now, ICT is an important area, Chairperson, and it is the Minister and the Deputy Minister, as well as the senior management, started from the DG's wish and dream that if we're going to leave a legacy now, it would have to be that every school is connected by 2019 in the deepest rural area, and that we have ICT there. And at times we tend to forget how well we've done. So let me give you an example, and I'm glad Mr. Kojana is seated next to me, because he's done remarkably well in helping drive this particular initiative with the DG, who was the former head of curriculum. We have digitized our entire curriculum content. We've established an opportunity for learners, and you know, people, not everybody has a tablet, and not everybody has an iPad or a computer, but almost everybody has a cell phone. And we've created a partnership through Mixit and UNESCO in terms whereof the entire curriculum content, all past papers, all exemplars, more than 200 readers can be downloaded, not in a smartphone, in the most basic form, at a minimal cost. And we are growing that there. In itself, I mean, we just were on Sunday, we had the opportunity of doing the final presentation of the culmination of the Ibiza week. And we had the opportunity of being in Free State, where we saw how the learners were very directly benefiting from our website in the Department of Basic Education. They are able to access it. And not only does it provide past papers and exemplars of the National Department of Basic Education, it also provides resources from the provinces. So we've created the backbone in terms of digitization, which we do believe is going to work very well. As we speak to you right now, Chairperson and honorable members, the department is busy with the architecture of an education cloud, which will cover all subjects in all grades from grade 1 to grade 12. I would hope that it is finalized by the end, of the next financial
June?
No, by the end of June next year. So, well, let's say by the end of the next financial year, hopefully, that would mean that all our content would be able, you know, even including the textbooks, would be made available on ICT. And we've already had a collaborative agreement with Vodacom, who are in the meantime basically providing ICT data in mathematics, science and technology from grades 10 to 12. And the arrangement is that any person who downloads the data from that particular crowd doesn't pay a cent as mahala. And they've given us an assurance that they would allow our cloud to sit on their platform, and which means that technically if you download data, it would be free of charge. Now with that revolution in mind, we can celebrate the fact that in the current financial year we've made quite, I think, 4 years of our workbooks are interactive. We are working towards making more of our workbooks interactive. And the phenomenon that is emerging across the country is that it's better to have uniform resources rather than have disparate source resources because of migration and a range of methods. So you are dealing with provinces and you know how TEN, for example, receives the greatest number of learners who come from other provinces. And just imagine if each learner uses a different textbook for a subject. It would create a lot of confusion, and therefore we are moving towards centralization of procurement and the uniform standards in terms of textbooks, which does not displace the possible or the reality that textbooks can be augmented, so provinces or districts could basically procure additional resources, but we do believe that there should be a core textbook per learner, per subject, per grade, and I think that is well within our grasp. So with regard to ICT, we've had the PACISA, and the PACISA, which is a rapid result driven by the Presidency, the Treasury, the Department of Basic Education, and in collaboration with the Department of Postal Services and Communication, have looked at 5 areas. The one is on infrastructure itself, the second is in terms of connectivity, the third is in terms of the devices, the fourth is in terms of the curriculum content, and the fifth is in terms of professional development. And all stakeholders were part of that particular process. And what we can speak about in terms of our current financial year, and I'm taking a lot of the information, so Ms. Caruso, when she presents, we can speak less, because I would have covered a fair amount of her ground, and I'm not reading from any notes, I'm just speaking to the issues. On terms of professional development, we have established, and this is important for the NCOP in particular, we've established 140 teacher resource centers, 70 of which are connected already with highly sophisticated connectivity in partnership with Vodacom, MTN, UNISA. By the end of this year, all of them will be connected. We've trained all the administrators over there, and they are functional and dynamic hubs for development. Now, among those, 40 of them would be dedicated ICT technological hubs, which would empower educators and learners where appropriate to be able to utilize ICT as an enabler in education. Now, we've commenced with the collaboration of SACE in terms of continuous professional development with programs for senior managers in the beginning, where basically principals and deputy principals, more than 27,000 of them, had taken up programs to empower and enhance their ability. But what is very, very comforting is subject advisors and ordinary teachers have basically now seized the opportunity of continuous professional development, and we do believe we are moving in the right direction. Now, people tend to forget, or they tend to overlook the reality that we've done a great deal, and in fact we offer, as the Department of Basic Education, perhaps the best comprehensive bursary for education. It covers all tuition, it covers accommodation, it covers travel, subsistence, and textbooks. And all that the learners have to do is pay back. How do they pay back? By serving and getting paid during that time. So if they spend 3 years at universities, they would basically serve for that period of time. And 13,980 students were, or learners were, the beneficiaries of the Funza Lushaka bursaries, and 5,066 were expected to graduate. In fact, certainly more than 5,000 had graduated at the end of last year. Now, you may recollect with regard to libraries and to promote and enhance literacy and numeracy, the minister had committed itself on Mandela Day to 1,000 libraries. The 1,000 libraries would be the creation of newly established libraries, the refurbishing of libraries, and to provide resources where you had a library but you had no resources. And we've exceeded the target in terms of that particular exercise, and we thought that is something that we could share, and we would continue in that vein for the new financial year, ensuring that our children have opportunities and access to libraries. We're working very closely with the Department of Arts and Culture to ensure that our libraries, the new ones that are established, particularly in our rural areas, are in the periphery of the school premises, so that it could be used by the learners during the day and by the community after school hours. And we ensure that our libraries are not only libraries with hard books, but they also have ICT, so that we could have information that is necessary. With regard to our screening and access program, which we focus in particularly among the youth, we think we are doing extremely well, and more than approximately 800,000 learners have been the beneficiaries of the school health program. Now, Chairperson, I'm coming to an end of my presentation. There's 3 points that I would want to make. You know, we tend to take for granted the incredible talent and the participation of our learners in various cultural initiatives. You are all aware of the census, which involves more than 850,000 learners trained by volunteer educators who do extremely well. And it's an annual event, and really it showcases the talent that we have. With regard to sport, we've increased participation quite significantly. In fact, I think at least 12,000 of our schools are participating in the football and the netball, and in collaboration with Patrice Motsepe Foundation, we have a huge boost in terms of that particular element. With regard to human rights, the moot court competition yielded very, very positive results. South Africa in the international competition won first prize. And if you look at the learners, they're not from former Model C schools. They are a combination of those from quintiles 1, 2, and 3 and quintiles 4 and 5. And in terms of race, it's a beautiful spread. And if you saw those learners, these learners participate every year, the finalists. They argue the case, guess where? In the Constitutional Court, in front of Constitutional Court judges. So for the past 5 years, the finalists go to the Constitutional Court, and it's something to basically witness. And maybe what we should do is, when that event takes place, invite members of the SDOP to just go and see what talent we have and how powerful our children are in terms of human rights. This year is the 40th anniversary of June the 16th, and it's important that we commemorate the struggle of our youth, but also pay particular attention to the importance of multilingualism, the importance of freedom, the importance of quality education, the importance of human rights, because we're also celebrating 20 years of the adoption of our constitution. And the problem statement for this year is a very, very interesting problem statement, which deals with the issues of language, deals with the issues of politics, which deals with issues of freedom of expression, which deals with the issues of rights and responsibilities. And we have one huge, huge gift. The retired Constitutional Court judge, Judge Van der Westhuizen, has already started supporting the Department of Basic Education in terms of that particular initiative. So he would be a wonderful anchor to guide this particular process. So, Chairperson, let me end by saying that we are indebted to your committee as well as the portfolio committee for the work that you do in the oversight. And I know you've driven the issues quite firmly with us, and we're grateful and we welcome them, because we cannot be perfect, and you can be our eyes and ears and help us. What we can assure you about is that we've succeeded through our common purpose effort to say that, take the politics out of education in a sense. It's about the child and the best interest of the child. And it's quite remarkable how all nine provinces work together. It's quite remarkable how all nine provinces share best practices. And more importantly, for the past 7 years, and I don't think any other department or any other ministry has done this, for the past 7 years, the ministry as well as the DG and senior management meet every quarter with district directors across the country. Half the agenda comes from the department, and the other half comes from the district directors. That's a wonderful forum for professional development and interaction, and I think the stability that you might see in our departments is as a result of that interaction. The minister is very concerned about the results, particularly in KwaZulu-Natal, the Eastern Cape, and in Limpopo. She has been there on no less than two occasions. The deputy minister has been there, and I can assure you that we are not sitting back and doing nothing about it. We are actually involved in terms of visits and support, and not only the ministry, but the senior management. And just recently, within 3 weeks, the minister was in the Eastern Cape, the deputy minister was in the Eastern Cape. We've made initiatives out there to deal with the issues of furniture, to deal with the issues of administration, to deal with the issues of human resources. And while the challenges are huge, we do believe that the potential of overcoming those challenges is there, provided we are persistent. What we would want, and perhaps ask this committee to reflect on, is that when interventions take place, there is no law that provides how it gets funded. There is no law that provides a framework. We've created a framework for good practice, but I do believe it's something that one has to take into account, because you do so at huge cost to the national department. We have to send senior officials to go and assist provinces, not on a just, you know, once in 6 month basis, but on a regular basis. That depletes the resources for the national department and really stretches us both in terms of our human capacity as well as our finances. But that notwithstanding, we do believe that it's about the future and destiny of our children, and if it means that we've got to do more with less, we will continue to do so. So thank you very much, Chairperson, for the opportunity.
Deputy Minister, I think you have actually covered the entire presentation and the official that is going to be doing the presentation is going to have it very easy in covering the issues that you may not have necessarily covered. You have done a really good job.
They teach you well.
They give you a very good training. But the issue that you have just mentioned, you have mentioned a lot of very important issues which you appreciate, but the issue of legislation, that there is no provision of a piece of legislation that seeks to direct how do you go about this intervention, I think it's an issue that we need to look into as a structure responsible for oversight. Yes. Thank you very much for your input, Deputy Minister. Let me hand over to the departmental officials that are going to be assisting us, the representative of the DG. I don't know if you want to have a remark prior to the presentation, just a remark, because you are a DG today. You are a DG today.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. You know, when we came in, we were reminded of using different languages at one stage or the other, so I was tempted to start my greetings in Sesotho, come and talk Sesotho, but I think the members of the Select Committee would understand in terms of how to manage that. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I think we are here as the Department of Basic Education just to provide you with the strategic and annual performance plan of the department, but also to give you a sense on how the sector is performing. And I think the Deputy Minister has given you the where we come from. I think we must be able to say where are we going, so that we can be able to see that are we going to be able to, in terms of the human capacity that we have and the strides that we have made, to be able to meet our strategic objectives properly. I think it will be, we've asked Ms. Carlson to make the
started with the prosecution. I hope, much as you understand that you're going to be presenting your annual performance plan, but I hope in a way you're going to be able to cover some of the issues that the select committee have raised with regards to our observations during the oversight visit. Problems of teachers that are not appropriately qualified for their subjects that they handle. A problem of teachers that are not teaching the subjects which they are qualified. Problems of teachers that are not paid on time and so on and so on. Problems of infrastructure. For instance, I heard the deputy minister say that Eastern Cape is due to receive about 55 schools of top class, of age of the art schools. But is the capacity in terms of staff in the province driving that program? Because we can plan, but if they are not capacitated enough to ensure that we achieve that, that is going to be a problem. I know that they have returned some money that they have not been able to use. Are they supported in terms of ensuring that they've got the capacity to receive and roll out that program? Problems of books, textbooks, learner teacher support material, electricity. If there has to be connectivity and ICT, there has to be electricity. Or problems of sanitation. And all those problems of shortage of classrooms. Deputy Minister said that you are going to be rolling out very beautiful schools, and you are going to eradicate schools that are not appropriate during this financial year. Are all provinces going to be taken care of in a way that is equitable in that regard? I said earlier that one of the very important aspects of the NCOP is that we are having a keen interest in provinces in terms of how they're taken care of, but also in terms of how they're performing. The issues of the Auditor General, the outcome, there are provinces that are really struggling. There are challenges that need to be supported. There are others that have been doing well, but they're retrogressing. What is the department going to be doing in that regard? The education and development of teachers, not only in math and science, but also in language proficiency. Because they've observed during the oversight that the teachers that find it difficult to communicate in a way that prepares learners for examination with a better understanding of their subject. And then the education enrichment services, you are going to be talking to that as well, and go maybe to the issue of markers, selection of markers, training of markers, because those are the issues that have got an impact in terms of the performance at the level of grade 12. It is a very important issue also, the issue of the examiners. Do they know how to examine? Are they trained? Do they know exactly how to go about in terms of certain questions? Can they answer the questions that they expect? You know, that's a critical question. So those are all the issues that you will try to encapsulate as you progress with your presentation. And I know we have engaged with you as a committee before. You are equal to the task. Then we can proceed.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. It's a pleasure to present our plans to you. I think that obviously the engagement that followed the presentation would allow us the opportunity to engage more fully with each of those points that you've listed. In fact, because I think that the Deputy Minister has set the scene, my task is easier, but I think that the full engagement of what our plans entail would follow, and certainly my colleagues that are present here on each of the branches and the acting DG would also then assist in us taking forward full responses to your expectations of this presentation. I just wanted to check, we normally plan for our presentations to be in the region of 20 minutes. Because of the work that the Deputy Minister has already done, he's made my job easier, so I'm going to also appeal to my colleagues there just to ensure that I keep to my time for us to allow full engagement with the rest of the members present. As you have said correctly, Honourable Chair, this particular presentation has been shaped somewhat differently to how we presented to the Portfolio Committee, precisely because our emphasis here is the provincial interest in how this plan will unfold in the sector at large. However, I think it's important that in my opening comments I should point out that with the Audit Committee and the Auditor General of South Africa's input and guidance on our planning process, we've had particular emphasis placed on the DBE's role as National Oversight Department. We've had to look particularly at our plan, focusing largely on our leadership of the sector, and also particularly in terms of our work that we're doing, how we report on what it is that our plans are set out to do is critical to our public accountability process. And for that reason, the leadership given in terms of the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation and that component of the sector of National Treasury, which now works within the belly of that DPME component, which guides the planning process in terms of the medium-term strategic framework, as well as the outcome-based approach, we have developed these plans as an ongoing tool, as an instrument to guide our actions in practice. So the work that we've done in developing this particular set of plans, both the strategic plan, which has come under quite a huge revision process, we've undertaken that in strict guidance and consultation with the DPME to allow for that kind of both the accountability process, but also to ensure that we comply with the aims and objectives of the MTSS. As the Deputy Minister has indicated, our particular presentation will cover the size and shape of the sector, and as well as our progress in learning outcomes, for us to reflect on what has guided our process. So what you will see here would be a few slides that would look particularly at what has informed this current planning phase. We have used this opportunity, as I said, to refine our strategic plan, but also to base our work on the audit profile of the sector, because we have seen some shifts, some positive and some not so positive, and that has also informed our planning process going forward. We've prepared an overview and we've looked at the background to our mandate, and we've also then, just for as a reminder to ourselves, we've looked at the MTSS sub-outcome, our action plan which we devised and updated to fit into this new administrative period, 2019, and with a goal to realising school in 2030 in line with our NDP. And then we've also included other priorities which we consider non-negotiable, as well as the strategic outcome goals of the institution. The rest of the program is listed, and we will then go per program to identify what those key indicators are that speak to our national purpose and mandate. And then the second component of our presentation will look to the budget, and the CFO will present on that. We are guided in this instance, and I think the DG has said this, especially since last year was one of the biennial conferences of UNESCO, and which we lead as a department, and the minister is the lead minister in the country around UNESCO, where we've committed to the Sustainable Development Goals 4 to ensure that serves the bedrock to our planning process, where Goal 4 speaks to the inclusive and equitable quality of education and the promotion of lifelong learning opportunities for all. In terms of the size and shape of the sector, I don't have to spell out it, because you can see it very, very clearly just how complex this sector is. It deals particularly not only with provincial departments. We also, in terms of our national role, speak to education, district and our management and direct guidance that we offer at that level, but also the substructures within provinces, circuit offices, schools, both public and private, as well as Section 21 and Section 20 schools. And amidst all of this, we also have a vast number of unregistered independent schools, which our business, together with higher education and others, and especially SAQWA, we look particularly at the validity of what is being offered to the public out there. And I'm sure that in various provinces we've seen that there are instances where parents have been misled and misguided about the legal status of such schools. And in this context also, we're looking at this complex matrix also being based on how we look at financial autonomy of schools, and also how, in terms of the understanding and competence of management level there, how they manage that particular component of the work. So it's a very complex sector that we're looking at. In terms of our statistics, we can see the size of the schooling system, learners in excess of 12 million, educators in roughly 416,000, and the number of schools that have been outlined in the table attached to this particular slide. In terms of the numbers of learners, here we've got a breakdown of both learners, educators, and of course the schools within the ordinary public ordinary school sector on the next slide. Particularly here, in terms of using our age-specific enrollment, the DBE and South Africa has been very, has made huge progress in terms of the MDGs and the universal access to schooling. And you will see here that in terms of the table that we've attached, not just simply for, but to also look at it as how we compare with other countries, South Africa is almost at 100% universal access. We probably have very few learners who are outside of the formal schooling sector, and that would comprise mainly learners that are classified as those in need of special needs education delivery. So in this instance here, we have demonstrated very well how we fit into the international profile with a number of countries listed there. We also have done very well in terms of equity. So the number of no-fee learners benefiting from access to no-fee schools, our 2015 figures are listed there. We have 87.14% of access to no-fee schools. And we will see that proportionately, the provinces obviously that sit maybe in the belly of a more economically sound context, that they are able to have lower figures that require access to no-fee schools. But we certainly have done very well in this respect. In terms of our learning outcomes, the next two slides will be focusing on the National Senior Certificate and ANNA performance, just to outline there and to demonstrate how the provinces have responded over the 2014 and 2015 performance period. Our provinces that we've seen performing more poorly in this are clearly listed in terms of where they sit in the quadrant there in terms of that performance. Our stronger provinces are listed there as Gauteng and Western Cape, but with the other provinces, Northwest and the Free State, also shifting into a more positive percentage in terms of performance there. You will see the clustering. I'll just go back to the previous slide also in terms of the NEC. So in terms of the audit profile, and the Deputy Minister and yourself as Chair, you pointed out the fact that the Select Committee is particularly interested in how we are managing the audit outcomes. And here we've got a comparative table. This is actually a slide that was presented by AGSA to I'm sure both the Portfolio Committee and the Select Committee. And you will see there that in terms of 2014-15 financial cycle, there was an improvement with fewer provinces demonstrating qualified audits. So there is a steady improvement in terms of that. But this has also become our focus. How do we, as a national department, ensure that provincial budget monitoring will lead to better audit outcomes? And in fact, the Minister, and I think the Minister said that in his introduction as well, that the move towards clean audits is certainly a target set both at the national level, but also for those provinces that have shown improvement. And to address in particular concerns, and with particular emphasis, those aspects of the budget management process at provincial level that we would need to provide good oversight and guidance to the provinces to improve upon. So just for you, as a reference point, this is a very important slide that we would need to acknowledge. We've also broken down the institutional performance indicators. I'm sorry, I think the dashboard has shifted somewhat. So the last column belongs under 2008, 2009, and 2009 is sitting on the on the margin. But that particular shows the progress over time and the audit outcomes that require our attention. In terms of the overview, we should get into the real meat of this presentation now. We've revised, as I said in my introductory comments, the 5-year strategic plan, which we tabled in March 2015. And we also took advice, as we said, from the audit committee in terms of our mandate as described in the National Education Policy Act of 1996, that we have to set our oversight, policy development, and monitoring and evaluation role. That's a very critical component. Quite often, if we judge by media inquiries and the media relationship, there's an expectation that the DBE will respond to everything that sits at the provincial level. And quite often we dive in there because provinces are either silent or sluggish in responding directly to the issue of provincial management of the education department. And so we have had to sharpen our objectives and to revise them in such a way that they are smart, specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and time-bound. So we are able to look at all of our objectives now with a tighter emphasis on what it is that we will be reporting on in terms of our public accountability as a national department. These indicators have also been based on what is assigned to us as a DBE in terms of our budget, and we also look particularly at our role, as I said, through both the HEDCOM processes where our HEDCOM subcommittees make particular recommendations, they engage with the detail of the operational plans, etc., and that's at that level that those committees then influence and impact on the work that we do at the HEDCOM level. We've also had to ensure that our plans reflect those key sector mandates that we've captured in our action plan, and as I indicated earlier, we've revised it up to 2019 and with an emphasis in aligning this to the National Development Plan. I think one of our key areas of emphasis is around the alignment with those long-term visions described within the National Development Plan. We've also noted, I think with distinction in each instance, how important this outcome one is and how it serves as a guide to our action. That we cannot be ascribed the apex priority of government and fail to deliver on that. So that has been a mantra throughout all of our planning processes to ensure that we can really give credence to the work of an outcome one lead department. So this together with our broad framing of the medium-term strategic framework, as well as those indicators that are described in our program of action, has laid as the bedrock there for the Minister's Performance Agreement and our delivery agreement as a department. We report on this on a quarterly basis to the Cabinet subcommittees, and we are then able to, I think, reflect together with our sister departments how we've collectively engaged with that. Our key project in terms of the Operation Fakisa is the ICT in education, and we will speak to that further in our description of the program. I don't have to repeat the MTSS priorities, so they are there on slide 18 for your further reference. We also, as I said, we report on this on a quarterly basis. So the MTSS therefore then serves together with the NDP as our frame for the new annual performance plan and the strategic plan. However, I think I must point out that quite often when we look at the strategic plan, we want to see everything that we're doing operationally. I just need to point out that we are also at the moment in the season of refining our operational plans at every level within the department. So we're not simply looking to the MTSS. We can't simply look to the SAP plan or the APP as the sole source of what it is that the department does account for. When we unpack in each of our separate engagements with the select committee and other parliamentary committees, we actually report accurately on how that operational detail unfolds in terms of the mandate of each of the of those branches within the DBE. So when we need to look for something that you think you know is happening out in the field, we also know that we can go look to the plan at an operational level to find the detail and the accountability track for that. So it's not simply what you see in the staff plan. I think that's where the bigger areas are described. I'm not going to go into the detail of this, but in terms of the action plan, we look at this extending to 2050, which is a new feature in it. I think we've kept the core indicators, but here we will look at how we can find expression as a sector leader in terms of school district, provincial, and the DB plans in alignment with each other. The core emphasis for us in this period of planning has been the thread that one can see from a national level right through to the district, to a point where I think, as the Deputy Minister has pointed out, the Minister meets quarterly with the DBE and branches with districts. The non-negotiables we I think are quite important that we need to just remind ourselves of. So this cycle, we've looked at LCSM as one of our first non-negotiables. They're not in a particular rank order, but we just list here the 10 aspects of the non-negotiables which we consider as non-negotiable to our planning and accountability process. Infrastructure, districts, both our monitoring and support for the improvement of district functionality, as well as doing that in conjunction with our social partners such as the NECT, the National Education Collaboration Trust, and other support agencies to improve the functionality of districts. And we've seen how in many of our provinces that have demonstrated the most progress is when they've used the guidance offered at that district monitoring level for the improvement of their performance and to improve the competency of those competency levels of district officials. We also looked, and I think Mr. Bajana will also speak particularly to the future deployment and placement aspect in that particular program, if there are further questions to that. ICT, I've already listed. Carry Goody is undergoing its own kind of evolutionary process where we now look at it entering its last years, and we are the transformation of that into a matric second chance program is critical to the functioning of what we offer as a national department to ensure that we improve the levels of learners and to give them access to completing the program that they've started and for whatever reason we're not able to complete. So the matric second chance program is an opportunity at some point. I think the select committee should engage with what the plans are for that, because I think that's quite a positive development out of the Caligula program and other curriculum interventions. In terms of library services, also last year, Minister also launched the Read to Lead campaign. You will see that we're using it there as part of our brand to say that the reading nation is a leading nation. So library services and improving reading and access to reading opportunities, that's critical to our non-negotiables for this period. And then also the issue of rurality. Rural schools, both which incorporates the work of multi-grade schools, farms, and also non-viable schools, that would impact on the process of rationalization, which I'm sure my colleagues will also speak to. But the rural schools, we just recently, last week in fact, had a ministerial roundtable on this particular area of emphasis, just to take and advance the program of the DBE to really put rural education on the map and on the radar at every level. Then of course, I'm not into the sort of the curriculum aspect, but the DM has already spoken to the 3-stream schooling system, and of course our social mobilization and learner well-being and safety factors, that's critical. I'm going to step up now because I can see the concern bits of that confusion on my left, that I must move on a little bit. Our outcome goals here are very clearly linked to our 5 programs of the department. These are the 5 core goals of the department in terms of how we've been structured. I think that it would be remiss of me not to mention that part of the tightening up and the reconfiguration of the DBE on a structural level is also crucial to enhancing the delivery on these particular programs. So currently there's a sharp look at how we can refine our structure, and the Minister has initiated that already with the work of the department in each of the branches to look at how these particular goals can be given greater emphasis and clarity in terms of how we respond to it institutionally. And then, as I said, the whole approach in this planning cycle has been the merging of priorities for alignment purposes. Our priorities are listed there, early childhood development. We've got colleagues from that section in curriculum here present today. The universal access to ECD, the policy for a pre-grade 1, a 2-year period, is also part of what's on the radar for that particular program, as well as the improvement of the competency levels of ECD practitioners being improved from entry level 4 to an entry level 6 as a minimum. The improvement of state funding as well as the provisioning of LTSM to the particular level. Likewise, with inclusive education, it's the establishment of full service schools. Also, how we respond in terms of the provision of CAPS-aligned materials and skills enhancement programs, especially for the South African Sign Language for blind learners, all of that also is important. We've also looked at the early detection processes that I think will be encapsulated in some of the work that the teacher development branch will speak to. That supported by curriculum, we'll be looking at how we enhance the capacity of those particular levels of delivery. Reading, I've emphasized already, and of course our LTSM can never be overemphasized. I'll just use my hard copy for some reason. Since we have a technical problem here, someone can just come and assist me. I'm just going to continue those with a hard copy. I'm sure members all have a hard copy. Thank you. Of course, in terms of our merge priorities, already Operation Patisa has been referred to. Multi-grade schooling encapsulated in our rural education process. And of course, I've listed the others. Deputy Minister has also spoken to our arts and culture approach. And this particularly, I think, picks up not only on our social cohesion program, but also the impact on the curriculum and curriculum delivery itself. So home language, etc., all form part of this particular priority. The maths and science, as I said, can never be overemphasized. This constitutes part of the reconfiguration of the Dinaledi conditional grant and the technical schools recapitalization, and that together forms our package for MSC, and the impact indicators they speak particularly to that. Teacher recruitment and deployment, a big area of emphasis and alignment for our teacher development branch, but also our partnership and collaboration with our sister department, higher education. We're looking closely here at the Sintra Shaka program as well as the PPN and the pace of buying of some of the provinces to the post-provisioning norms and delivery on that in terms of our working provinces. Teacher development also would include looking at strengthening inclusive education as well as the monitoring and the assessment of delivery in terms of the IQMS process for us as a national department, and that supports our management development program. SGBs also contribute a critical part of our social partners within the schooling sector. So in terms of school governing bodies, it's about the capacity of school governing bodies here. And even if there's, I think, is a huge concern for us because we have very well-functioning SGBs. And obviously the emphasis of whatever is being proposed through the legislative process around the revised South African Schools Act will also speak very clearly to the need for us to really focus on support and oversight given to school governance. The competency of principals, likewise, form key part of our merge priorities. I've spoken to the functionality of this before. Infrastructure remains, that remains a huge area of our national intervention process. There are some issues there that I think we would need to be engaging around, and that would be about the implementation of the infrastructure norms and standards, but also the further planning processes. There have been recent a very healthy focus on whether the rationalization process and the provision of infrastructure can both inform what we need to do in terms of our future plans for infrastructure delivery. We see that we are not operating on a little island. There are very many social dynamics that impact on where infrastructure ought to be provided. The demographic shifts of where people choose to live and work and where their learners, where their children must learn, those things must speak to each other. So I'm sure that my colleagues in infrastructure will be speaking to that in terms of our further planning. Sports and recreation and learner wellness also constitute very key parts of our planning process. I'm not going to go into the details of each of these focus areas because I think by now the Select Committee is quite familiar with our various programs. But just to say that in terms of our first program, here we're talking about compliance, accountability, and our financial systems being sound. And that, of course, will inform everything else we do in terms of our budget expenditure and whether we can, in fact, account for our plans coming to fruition in terms of our implementation strategies. Do we reflect accurately and regularly on our deliverables and our delivery of the expected areas of performance? And that would sit in the heart of every one of our programs as listed there. So to get through these focus areas, I think it's important that we look particularly at how these programs, such as, for instance, in terms of Program 4, we were looking at the remodeling of Anna, which you know 2015 was characterized by the strife between teacher unions and the departments and provinces, and I think that particularly has lent a fresh eye to what it is that we are trying to do through Anna, and I think people are in a mutual way finding each other in terms of the work that we are doing as a collective now to address the remodeling of Anna. The rest of our international compatibility in terms of our performance, as well as our inclusion of other social partners in how we can see education as a catalyst for positive change socially on a bigger scale, that I think is part of what we understand the role of the QLTC to bring all of those social partners on board and to support those districts in their delivery. The Minister has also spoken about our social and co-curricular programs, so I'll skip over that. And then also to say that here, in terms of our planning services, I've already outlined the steps that we've taken to ensure that we've incorporated all comments in our final product. I'm skipping over to the two because that outlines particularly what we understand. Maybe what we need to get to just very quickly are these strategic objectives and the medium-term targets that have been set. Because these particularly, I think, speak to what we deem to be achievable in terms of our SMART indicators and objectives that we've been able to say over time, this is how we are going to roll out our delivery on these indicators, and this is how we're going to be reporting on them on a quarterly basis. We don't always have an opportunity to present our quarterly reports to this committee, but we do so on a regular basis because of the compliance through the national process at the portfolio committee level, but also through the cabinet committee process, where we speak to outcome one delivery. In this particular one, we unpack through the process how we're going to what's achievable and what is being set as our target. I'm just going to flick through this slide so that colleagues can and honourable members can see how this relates to our particular objectives and over the medium term rollout of that. So I want, with your permission, not belabor this so that we can get to the financial concern. I'm sure that members would have had an opportunity already to see our presentation and the report of all the planning documents, so that we will then go to questions for the detail of that. Just as a reminder, I think that part of our outlining of this particular cycle, looking particularly at our in-school environment as being safe and violence-free zone for learning and teaching, that's a very critical one that we've identified in Program 5, so that our hotspot schools are closely monitored in terms of our partnership with the staff and other agencies. I'm going to pause here now, and certainly we can come back to each of those separate slides. I don't want it to be, don't want to detract from the CFO's component of the presentation. I've spoken already for about 15 minutes. So I'm going to hand over to the CFO. Thanks. Sure.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I'll be very quick on the financial part. Maybe if we start on slide 51. On slide 51, we are indicating the amount that we started with when we were preparing the MTF for the MTF process, and the budget that we started with is indicated in the top line, where the, for 2016-17, for instance, we had 22.528 billion. But after when we started the process, then the department reprioritized some of the activities within the department due to the economic situation in the department. So Karigude was, the department decided to cut on Karigude 50 million per year over the NTF, but that money was shifted to a second chance program within the department. So for the NTF, we are cutting about 150 million. And then we reduced, where we said reduction in vacant position, that was for the IQMS program. But that money was shifted to NIDU because there was a huge shortfall on NIDU, and that is indicated on the last line on the same slide. And then the school infrastructure backlog grant, this one was not cut by the department. It's a national treasury process. They indicated that this program had a particular life, so it must come to an end, but this is not finalized yet. And they are indicating that this money is not being lost within the department, but it will be shifted to the education infrastructure grant, meaning it will be a conditional grant to provinces. And then we reduced some items on goods and services to cover the shortfall in the department for items like audit costs, legal services, and IT portion in the department. And then if we go to the next slide, which is slide 52, we also, this is just showing the top two lines are showing where the money was shifted to. And then there was also a baseline reduction. Now this one was a process through National Treasury that was done, that was authorized by Cabinet. Now this money is shifted away from the department. So it means we are losing this money. ANA has been reduced by 100 million per year over the MTF. And then for NECT, the last two outer years, we are losing 100 million per year, which is in total 200 million. And then for goods and services, those amounts per year, 1 million, 1.8 and 2.6. And then the education infrastructure grant, 160 in the first year, 170 and 190. And we are also losing money on compensation of employees. So for 2017-18, we are losing 30.674. And then for 18-19, we are losing 48.553. And then if we go to slide 55. Slide 55 is just showing how the allocations are increasing or reducing from 2015-16 to the current financial year, which is 16-17. All the programs are increasing except teachers and education human resource branch, which is reducing by 0.7%. But this one, the main one of the reasons that it is increasing is because of the shifting of funds from IQMS to NIDU, that is within the department. Now, because we are moving from this branch to the planning and information and assessment, hence it's showing a reduction there. And then the next slide is just showing the allocations per branch over the MTF. And those are the figures as indicated there. And as I indicated, some of the programs are increasing, even though it's by a small amount. Program 1 is increasing over the MTF, and one of the major items in Program 1 that is getting the bulk of the increase is the allocation for the office accommodation of the department. And then Program 2, the budget for this branch it will increase over the MTF, and the increase is mainly due to the inflationary adjustment. And then Program 3 is the one that I indicated. The decrease in 2016-17 is mainly due to baseline reduction affected by Treasury through Cabinet, as well as the reprioritization of the compensation of employees that was shifted from IQMS to NEDU. And then Program 4, the budget for this program increases over the MTF. This one is increasing because we are reducing the school infrastructure backlog grant, but we are increasing EIG. Now these are in the same branch, so you don't see the effect at all because they are within the same branch. And then the Program 5, the budget for this program increases over the MTF, and the increase is mainly due to inflationary adjustment as well. And then the next slide is showing the increase for UK economic classification from 2015-16 to 16-17. And on this slide as well, there are items that are increasing, others are reducing. And the reasons for that are reflected on slide 61. Compensation of employees, although, because it's still 2016-17, we don't have the outer years. The increase here is due to improvements made on conditions of service and inflation rate. And then the increase of goods and services is due to agency and support services are outsourced. Now this one decreases due to the department refraining from utilizing agencies. Due to cost containment measures implemented within the department. And then the increase is on inventory on LTSM. Now this is mainly the workbooks allocation. And then previously payments related to this item were classified under operating payments, but we have a classification by National Treasury in the standard chart of accounts, so we have to shift from one item to the other, hence we have in some of the shifts. And then the item other, the growth on this item is due to payments relating to professional services units for ACD, which was previously capitalized, now is classified as part of goods and services. So this is increasing the goods and services, and it will show a slight decrease on capital allocation. And then the increase in the payment for capital between 2015-16 and 16-17 is mainly due to school infrastructure backlog grants and the payments for capital assets. And then on the next slide, which is slide 62, we are just showing the allocation over the MTF for the economic classification, and the figures are indicated there. Now we'll see the second slide, which is specifically and exclusively allocated. We are only showing the amount in the 2016-17. This is the allocation for the RCD program, which is now moving to conditional grants. As you can see, just above it, from 16-17, we had 16 billion, it's increasing to 19 billion. It's due to that shift between the infrastructure allocation. And then on slide 63, we are showing allocations for earmarked funds, and these are over the MTF. And there are items that are not reflected on the list, but some of them, it's not that they're not there yet anymore. Over the years, some of them, Treasury has taken them away from earmarked and made them normal allocation, hence we don't have, we are not showing them on the list, items like IQMS and Karigude. Karigude, we are showing only the EPWP portion, which is earmarked for 16-17 at the top, which is 68 million. And then on the next page, slide 64, is the allocation for conditional grants. These are the four conditional grants that we have in the department, and the allocations are indicated over the MTF. And as I indicated, the top one, EIG, is increasing significantly because of the RCD money being shifted to this grant. But as I indicated, the money is not lost to the department. And then on slide 66, these are the transfers for the department, and we're just reflecting the allocations over the MTF. Thank you, Chair.
I thank you very much for the presentation by the department. Maybe it's time for members to engage the presentation, except to say that in your presentations, I didn't hear you cover the issues that I've raised. Maybe the acting DG will attend to that later. I don't know. No. Let me continue to share. Continue, DG.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Deputy Minister. I thought that Chair would guide us, because certainly we can respond to the questions of oversight. Maybe it has been on our oversight not to have really captured some of the questions that you raised. But I know that we were together with yourselves when we went through the provinces, and I think we will be able to provide you with the responses
because they've started it that way, let us accept them as part of the overall response at the end when members have interrogated the presentation.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I saw Honorable Pambus Wallace stand first, and Honorable Kaula, Honorable Samka, Honorable Masu, Mushodi, Honorable Dami. Mushodi. Honorable Sassing, in that order. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and the presentation from the National Department of Education. If I could just say, Deputy Minister, firstly I want to compliment the fact that you have a strategy set up to respond to the training for deaf educators. That is a constitutional response. And I'm quite happy that there's something in place that is set for that. If you could, I could please ask Deputy Minister if you could finish the details of the time frame for each and every province that will be complying to that. Deputy Minister, your department is doing the job, having been on oversight. But my main concern with your department is to do or to strengthen, because there is monitoring, but to strengthen your oversight, especially with the Eastern Cape, with the KZN, strengthen and not sit in your offices but follow up on your money that you deploy, because it is not doing justice. For instance, the fact that, which is something that the DC will be replying to or responding to, the fact that three learners share a textbook, specifically in Lady Frey in Tembeyi, moving from Matanga, moving from Tembeyi, moving from, what is this text? Villages, Matanga, and Bolotwa. And Bolotwa. It's a cause for concern. When the allocation of your budget says one textbook, one learner, but we found also that they were using Amagwinya calculators, which are not self-standing. And this is precipitated to the singularity that has experienced in there. So you deploy the money, you send the money, but you're not following how is it used until the volcanic eruption. And for me, that's a cause for concern. Follow your money, you do deploy the money, you do, you've got strategy in place and all that, but strengthen on your monitoring. Deputy Minister, if you could give us an update on any of the court cases that you do have within the Department of Basic Education. Last year and all that, nothing has been said about that. Deputy Minister, the rationalization is moving at a torrid pace in the Eastern Cape. And to be specific, in Tembeyi, it is there, but it's moving at a tortoise pace. If it could can just be expedited, that will be appreciated. The chairperson has mentioned, and I suppose the DG will reply to that, the fact of the FUNSA, the Shaka Basari holders, putting English teachers and math teachers also adds to the high failure rate. Okay. Nutrition and food security to be encouraged in the premises of the school, and I'll mention specifically the KwaZulu-Kusa High School, where the land is bare and no food security, also precipitated by the fact that there's a shortage of water, no bath services are being rendered to the school, and even the community sources the water from the KwaZulu-Kusa. Maybe your intervention together with the Department of Water and Sanitation can precipitate the processes to get it, because they're getting water from the boreholes. Also a concern, the cooking in shacks, which also for me is a health hazard in terms of the dust and the infrastructure that's needed there. Deputy Minister, the presence of the district manager, Jojoana, Mr. Jojoana, and the infrastructure, the infrastructure man who was there from the first day to the other is a compliment and should be noted, but the absence, DM, of the provincial Eastern Cape Department, and your department was fully hands-on. They would attest to that. By the second day to the last day, there were only two representatives from the provincial department. They knew exactly that we were coming there. They did not bother to be there. Also, what tends to be a problem which came from the principal and the teachers from Sembeni are the roads. We even asked to leave before the start of the rain, because if we could be blocked and the river fills up, we're not going to go back home. So your collaborative efforts in with together with the Department of Transport to precipitate access to the learning institution is a priority. Thank you for what you mentioned as the promotion of multilinguals on 16th June, and I wish all provinces could hold it together. Gigi, I'm sure you will respond with the security. In Bumba, the computers are there, the teachers are not there, and the breaking in the school, there's no security in there. Deputy Minister, it came from the learners that we interacted with, that on the 20th of each month, when it's payday for the teachers, they leave school at 11 o'clock. It's a consistent, it's a well-known thing. The learners even went to an extent that we even know that we will go to other learners, because in the other schools somewhere they're also leaving it on the grade years, we know 11 o'clock after 10 we leave. That's your department to strengthen the provincial department in monitoring that time wasted. And how do they pay back with the amount of hours that needs to be taught to the learners? There's no structure in place. The kilometers that I have to be travelled by the subject advisors, there's a restriction on it, so they can't get to other places because they have to travel certain kilometers. That was also a cause for concern. In KZN, 87% of the metric pass rate in another year, going down to a percent decline. It was also articulated by the principal that there was a copy at some stage. Can we strengthen our national efforts that it does not happen, because the true reflection of what came out last year did testify to what happened the year or the previous year. And Deputy Minister, this becomes a problem when they get to the tertiary and cannot fulfill the course of what they therefore in terms of standing the pressure at higher learning institutions. So we are precipitating and digging our own holes if we let the children copy and give a true reflection of an 80%, but when they get to tertiary, in the first term they become dropouts. The indefinite leaves in KZN by the teachers, and there's a body that's responsible to monitor such a where the teachers go and all that. I just slipped out on my notebook that I had yesterday, and I just left it on the table at home and realized. Yes, exactly. So can you intervene in the national department? It is provincially inclined, and it was also mentioned by Satu that I think your intervention as a national department can bring justice to the right of a learner in that it is, please intervene, because the teachers continue to take indefinite leaves, they get paid, they do this and whatever, but I'm sure with your intervention, because provincially nothing is happening. Such as intervention, taking teachers during to memorial service during school hours is a cause for concern, Deputy Minister. No payback of the time comes back to the learners after they've attended two or three memorial service. I do have my cultural beliefs, and I know exactly being umXhosa what it means when you have a bereavement, but not at the expense of a child's time. Can it happen after 3 o'clock? Because it takes forever, not just even an hour, to be with this memorial service. And I do stress, I have my cultural beliefs, but not at the expense of the learner's time. I thank you.
Okay, Honorable Cohen.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Deputy Minister, the department, colleagues. Let me start by making a comment on your strategic outcome-oriented goals from slide number 22. I think they are very good, Honorable Chairperson, especially the first three for me, governance and management, second one, curriculum, and then teacher supply. They speak right to the core of the issues that need to be attended. So I just wanted to make that remark on the strategic outcome-oriented goals. And then go back to the slide that has got your enrollment, which was again another eye-opener for me, Honorable Chairperson. I just want to comment on three provinces. KwaZulu-Natal, which tops your enrollment figures with 2,800,000. With 6,000 schools. But what interests me is your second one, which is your Gauteng with 2.2 million learners, with 2,700 schools. But look at the third one, which is the Eastern Cape with 1.9 million learners. But look at the schools. More than Gauteng, just close to KZN, 5,700 schools. Very interesting. Now, I have been reminded of your program talking to school, recapitalization, where you are trying to address this problem. But again, it lends you to more problems, because what happens in the provinces is schools get closed locally for learners to go to other schools because these schools are referred to as non-viable schools. But when in some instances learners have to be transferred to other schools, there is no transport provided. You are trying to solve this one problem and you land our communities into that other problem. Can this be addressed in a way that will not develop new problems for the communities, because this makes me understand that this is where it has come from. But now, in terms of responding to it, provinces do not have the same agenda, if I can put it that way. In some other provinces, they are building boarding schools so that, you know, they address this problem of transport. Yeah, but in case at end, one is not very happy about how it is being attended to. My next comment, Chairperson, is on slide number 24, the mathematics and science program, the very last bullet, which talks to increasing the number of schools offering mathematics, which is one of the objectives of the department. I just made a comment there to say, are there no contradictions with the provinces on this one? Are you singing from the same book when you say this? Because some other provinces are telling us a different story. No. We can't be encouraging that everybody go to mathematics. Now, these are things that you need to be talking about in your min-max and your whatever admin meetings which combine you with your provinces, because I sense contradiction there with some objectives of some of the provinces. The next one is on slide 25. Again, which is cause for concern for me, Chairperson. It talks to the teacher recruitment and deployment. There is this program that the department has of bursaries. You give bursaries to graduates and diplomats who have got their diplomas and their degrees. You take them to school, but it's your sister department, maybe your higher education. You take them to teacher training for 1 year, and they come back, you put them in class. My question is there quality? Is there quality in that program? We are trying to address the issue of content for teachers, but at the same time, the very same government is defeating the very same objective. You want to give us quality teachers, but are you doing it through this program where one is at training for just 1 year and you come back? I noticed this chairperson, because there is one person I know, who was enrolled in this program, was at the university for 1 month and came back for teacher practice. And I said to myself, good gracious Lord, what kind of a teacher is going to come out of this program? I was at school for 2 years, and I started doing my practice teaching at the third year. How can you be at school for 1 month and come back and do practice teaching? It's a disaster. Whoever is running that program, it is a disaster. So some of the things you are saying in other programs as government, I'm not talking now education, I'm saying as government, you are shooting yourself in the foot with some of the programs you are developing. So can that be attended to? My next comment, Honorable Chairperson, is on slide 30, your program 5. It just caught my eye, that one. The very first one, it says your objective is you're building social capital, and you also want to foster greater social cohesion. Social cohesion, I understand. You learn to regard social capital, and what is social capital? If you understand that, and you know, you need a mark among the guys, what is the social capital? Who's managing you? Well, lastly, Chairperson, on the budget, it's just a comment again on that one to say, I know that you are not doing your report, you are just outlining to us what you intend to do this year, but it will help in the future if when you detail the budget to us, you also refer to the previous year, you know, because we don't have elephant memories, with the exception of one member in this community who has got that, because he's an elephant. Now, so that we keep on looking back at what was there before and why you say what you are saying as for the next financial year. I think it will help us, especially because there are so many things we are doing, and sometimes, you know, these memories get lost. So if you can do that in the future for when you present the project to us, but I'm glad that at least you don't have extraordinary cuts in the department. Your budget is increasing year by year. It's not going down, it's going up, which is a good thing for education. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
I'm happy with the political overview of the Deputy Minister addressing the challenges around the three provinces, KwaZulu-Natal, KZN, and Limpopo. I'm very happy because I'm coming from the Eastern Cape. But what worries me most, Deputy Minister, through you, Chairperson, is the Eastern Cape where I'm coming from. Can you please share with us what exactly the challenges in the Eastern Cape? Is it with the leadership, political leadership, or the administration? Because you can change the leadership today, fund. The administration is there. What exactly are the challenges? Is it the political leadership or the administration, or what are the plans of the department to address that challenge in the Eastern Cape? The issue of the infrastructure in the Eastern Cape, we have mentioned it when we were doing your political overview. But in the Eastern Cape, education infrastructure grant has been cut down by 12% from about 1.7 billion in 2015-2016 year to 1.5 billion in 2016-2017 because of slow spending in 2015-16 financial year. What repercussions will be had on the infrastructure development in the Eastern Cape province? You know, Chair, on the infrastructure, when you are building schools, you expect that there will be you will provide furniture, but yabunga biko furniture. There is no school there when there is no furniture. If we can have a plan that when are you go or the time frame to eradicate the infrastructure, then you provide furniture at schools. That is my concern around the infrastructure development plan in the area of our province. I think I will stop there, because when I don't know the name, but the lady who was presenting the program, all my questions were addressed. So I don't have other questions than, and I wait for the time come when we are going to do the oversight on the annual report. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chairperson. Let me start also to welcome the presentation, Honorable Chairperson. And on my side, Honorable Chairperson, I'm having only three questions, and I'll go straight to my question. Deputy Minister, the State President in his honor and the Finance Minister in his speech put more emphasis on cost containment measures by department and entities. How does your budget respond to that call? That is my first question, Honorable Chair. The second question, Deputy Minister, a poor project performance at the provinces remains a concern. The department should intensify its support. That is the second one, Honorable Chair. The last one, Deputy Minister, if maybe please show how your APP and the budget are linked to the National Development Plan, NDP. That is my last question for now, Honorable Chair. As you know, it is the first time that I attend the committee today. Thanks very much.
Those are maiden questions. Thank you very much. Honorable Zamin.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. My greetings to all of the members and the Deputy Minister and the team from the department. Let me also welcome the presentation by the department and appreciate the presentation done. At the beginning of the presentation, the presenter indicated that this presentation is different from what they presented to the portfolio committee. It is province bias because we are representing provinces. I don't know whether it's me, I might have missed that. I did not see that in the presentation. I was going through the presentation again, I did not see it. I might have missed it. It could be me, I don't know. Just checking where is it, because it doesn't end here. When I go back to my province, what do I tell them about what the department has planned for the province? Because I would have wanted to see a situation where you say we're going to train so many teachers, how many are there in Mpumalanga that are going to be trained, and at how much? I'm linking the two questions. It's not you making it, it's happening with all departments where the budget is presented separately from the activities. Ideally, you should be talking about with both of them. Maybe it can come later when the budget is presented to say, earlier we said we're going to build so many schools in the Eastern Cape, for example. We're going to use how much this money that we're going to use. It makes sense if you do it that way. But if you present, especially the manner in which the budget was presented, it was telling us how much money has been cut. It's my third question, I'm mixing them. How much money was cut? Where are the adjustments? But it's not speaking to the programs for me. How we're going to, how much money is going to spend on what? It gives us a challenge as a committee, because when we do an oversight later, we're not able to say, you said you're going to do ABCD with so much money. Why now are you at 60% in terms of the budget, but you're at 20% in terms of performance? So this kind of a presentation, it doesn't really assist us much as members of the committee, because later when we do the oversight, we're not able to follow up as presented, because the importance of this presentation is not just any other presentation where you brief us. You are telling us what you're going to do in this financial year, when and how. We must come back later when you report to say, you said you're going to do this. Have you been able to achieve at how much? So I'm just raising this. I don't know whether there's something that you can change much or not at this level, but I'm just raising it. In terms of ECD, I'm as much passionate as your chairperson, Honorable Deputy Minister, because we share this area. I know that you're responsible from 4 years and up, 5 and up, but you're still responsible for the curricula of the lower grades. Yes, age. I don't see it here. Especially when you talk about development of teachers or educators. Yesterday we got a presentation from social development indicating how many new ECDs or centers they are going to build in the financial year. What is your response? Firstly, in terms of the curriculum. Secondly, in terms of the number of educators you're going to train for those, it's not coming up clearly for me. Because it doesn't help to have centers and those people are not trained. The critical part is to have trained people at that level. I'm not comfortable, Honorable Chair, that we're going to have responses on the oversight later. I had hoped that, because now we are planning, those things are included in the plan. That was my expectation. We got responses. You were there, you were part of us in most of the meeting. What we are expecting now that we see these challenges when we did oversight, this is how we are responding as a department. That was my expectation. That we finalize the plan, then we respond, so what? They've responded, so what? I would have loved to see a response in the form of a plan to say this is how we're going to deal with the challenges. We are going to listen to the responses. Maybe they will speak to the plan chair, because we don't know now. Maybe I'm preempting. But one would have really wanted to see that every chairperson was trying to guide. I think that is what she was saying. To say, as you present your plan, say that in this program, especially the issue of the multi-phase, it was one of the biggest issues in both provinces. I was expecting that the department would say, this is how we're going to deal with it in the Eastern Cape. Already you are responding to the issues that we came across there.
e-learner support, learner teacher support material. I think you need to, they need to be dedicated effort to deal with that. Because at national level, you might be doing everything that you're supposed to do. It came up, especially in the Eastern Cape, that whatever you're supposed to do as a department at national level was done. In fact, your personnel there was very strong. I was very much impressed. They were able to give detailed information that this is what we've done. But the fact of the matter is that learners don't have them, as you understand, because you will be saying at national level, we have delivered learner support material. But you go to a school, they don't have. For different reasons. Some of them, they will say because the collection of books from the learners or parents, whoever it is, that should not affect a child. Maybe we need to come closer to that. How best do we assist teachers when learners don't return books? Because it, at the end of the day, it affects. We're not saying they must not return, they must return, but how best do we support the school in terms of doing that, so that other children who are coming to a grade are not affected by that. They find themselves sharing the quality. The quality. She said Amagunya. I'm sure Amagunya may not explain, but the quality. Eastern Cape, I know it's not national, it's provincial, but it follow the money, as you are saying. Eastern Cape, the quality of it's not good. It's not good at all. It has to be followed up, because when we asked them, they said our specifications during the tendering were very good, and the person who got a tender indicated that he's going to provide this qualification, this specification that he requested, but at the delivery point it was something else that needs to be followed up. It's corruption. If I may put it mind, it's corruption. It has to be followed up. The last one, Ifunza Lushana, my take on that one was that the program is good. We appreciate that we're trying to deal with the challenge of science teachers. The only challenge I had, which it was raised by the provinces, both it was in Natal and Eastern Cape, is that they don't have experience. You can't take me just direct from the university and put me in matric. Even if the experience is there, but matric is a very serious grade that you can take them there. Unless if there is a continuous practice, I don't know what you call them when you send them to school, to do practicals, yeah, continuous until when they finish. But the main concern was that, yes, we do have teachers now, but they don't have experience. In Eastern Cape, you've got to come closer. If unions, teachers and districts, all of them in one word are saying we have a problem with the province. The province is not doing, usually unions and districts don't speak the same language. But they were speaking the same language, that all of them were complaining about the province. So I think you've got to come closer there and try to assist. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Chair. I must compliment the department and the Deputy Minister on the initial presentation. It's just sad that we couldn't have just got up after the Deputy Minister has spoken and walked out of the door. Because his vision of education cloud and the ICT-driven education system is really first world technology and I suppose the way to go. But unfortunately, then we have to come back to reality, back from the dreams. And I'm sorry, Ms. Carlson, that the Deputy Minister stole some of your thunder, but I know him that way. The reality is, we've been to the Eastern Cape. And don't want to say I know what's going on in the Eastern Cape, because there are more than 5,500 schools, and I've been to 4. But what I've seen and what I've learned is this education cloud on the one side where we want to go to. I don't believe it will be in. It will be implemented by the end of the next financial year, which is actually on the 31st of March 2018. I think was that the next one, not the current one, 2018. It's a nice one. Because we sit with the reality of mud schools. We sit with the reality of bucket system at schools. We sit with massive problems. We sit with a situation just on the practical side, where we got into one class where 4 or 5 children had seats, had tables and chairs. The other 30 were standing in a corner. And a few kilometers from there are locked classrooms with furniture stacked to the ceiling. A few kilometers. Now somebody must know about this. It's not for me as a politician to see that something is drastically wrong here. So we have to do the one thing and do not leave the other. So this is the right way to go with education cloud and overcome the problem of learners not handing back their tablets and prosecutions that have to be initiated against learners. Also understanding where they come from, where the first time in their life they have something worthwhile that they can work with, that they can make progress on, and now it's been taken away from them after they've just... It's a massive challenge, but if we have to go that way, much more needs to be invested in that, and much time and more education just on how to use the ICT system. So this is the dream, but now the reality, as we've seen of our snapshots, and even. I'm happy that you've got the DDG responsible for curriculum development here, and my friend right at the back there, well, she was there when I looked at the roster in a class we're not supposed to look at, and to see that the Achilles heel of our education system now, we're referring to the quality of our results. Not the pass rate, the quality of the results, maths and science. Where a quarter of the time that was allocated to maths, it's a quarter of the time allocated to English, that's allocated to maths, which is a problem for our whole country. If that is wider than the snapshot that we've seen. So then the question comes up, who controls this? Who looks at it? How can we make progress if this is not being addressed? My colleague here has referred to the absence of educators from the schools, and by the trade union submission, they are absent on average of 4 days a month from their classrooms. I've said it before. I haven't heard a positive response on this. So that means that the time, the learner educated time, is being cut with 20% right from the start. If we take, there are about 20 school days per month. Now, then, what is then a concern with the background of these challenges? The cut of the budget on spending on, I think it's program 3. We need more money there, not less. To get into the system, we need more money there. We have to up the level of the efficiency of your educators. And may I say in this room, we have to reduce the influence, and we'll come out in the report, of some trade unions on the outcome of our education. And I think that's also, it was said here, when reference was made to ANA, to
go into consultation with stakeholders. Who are these stakeholders? Who are the stakeholders who actually wrecked the ANA in 2015? And what's the reason for that? Is that not because ANA not only assess the standard of the learners, but more specifically the standard of the educators and the efficiency of the educators? So, Chair, I'm concerned about the cut and the future cut, downward trend in the spending on, I think it's program C that was referred to, and I would like to get a response or how would that be counted. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, honourable members, for the questions that they have posed and also comments and the guidance that you've given to the department. I also have got a few issues maybe to raise so that you just respond on all the questions. Where you can't give us responses directly now, because maybe they would require you to go back to the office to inquire and get facts, would accept that, provided acting DG, we are going to get responses by the end of the week. Because departments tend to get away with it, they go away forever, they don't bring back the responses, and they don't appreciate it. My first question with regards to your APP is on slide 25. The issue of where you say that the priority is to ensure the functionality of districts and schools. During our oversight, that is why I tried to give guidance earlier on, but let us put that one aside because of our group. During our oversight, we could actually see that there is a problem with the management of districts. There is a problem with regard to circuit managers. And our system is structured in such a way that a deputy minister, if districts are not strong, we are not going to get good results. Because that is where the whole system, the practicality of the system is, at the level of district down to schools, and the circuit managers are playing a vital role in ensuring that the systems are gelling at the level of schools. The management by the school principal is a critical issue. The capacitation of principals with regards to managing their schools properly, and also the accountability of the principals and consequence management is another issue. We did see that in some of the schools, principals are not performing maybe over a period of 3 years in succession. And nothing is done about it. In some of the institutions, there are principals seconded in the offices of the union. They are not in the institutions where they are supposed to be. And this is contributing to the downward spiral of performance, both quality-wise and quantity-wise. So those are the issues that we need to raise with the district management, as to say that they need to check up. So the functionality of the districts, I don't know how far you have made plans to ensure that districts are strong in the Department of Education. That's my first question. The second question is the issue of curriculum dispensation by the teachers in the schools. We found that some teachers are teaching subjects in which they are not qualified, or they are teaching too many subjects, and the issue of the timetable that has been raised by the honourable member, where in one of the schools we discovered that the time allocated for subjects is not in terms of the standard and the norm. And it means the conduct time is not properly taken care of, and surely those learners are not going to perform at the required standard. The supply of teachers. You find that in other schools there is oversupply of teachers, and then in other schools there is a shortage of teachers. I mean, the distribution of teaching personnel needs to be attended to also as a matter of agency. In terms of your program, according to the APP, Program one is administration. Two is curriculum policy support, monitoring and management. Three is teacher education and human resources. Four is planning, information and assessment. You have said that you have curtailed or you have reduced the budget for ANA. I don't get the rationale for that. Is it because you feel it has over budgeted for, or do you feel that it is of lesser importance now, that there are challenges? What is the thinking behind the reducing that budget of an assessment that is so critical prior to grade 12? We said that the importance of education is not about the performance of grade 12 as such. It is performance at all levels. So this, ANA, is important to us. Maybe you'll explain why the budget has been curtailed. And also the dropout rate, when the DM commented earlier on, I was happy if the department is arguing that the dropout rate is being reduced. When we compare the number of entrants at grade 1 level and those that leave grade 12 at the end, the dropout rate is reducing. However, we want to check those that drop out, where are they? And which institutions absorb them, or what skills are given to them? Second chance program, a very good program to give people a second chance, and I want to believe that it's going to be closely monitored and to ensure that the budget allocated for that is also channeled accordingly, because you have matched it with, did you say, with curriculum? The budget for second hand is matched. Mm. So it's going to be a wider spread of people that are going to benefit from that budget. We are going to keep track of how it is being used. Your budget has increased by 3%, isn't it? And inflation, is it reduced or increased by 3% for the financial year? I guess the sense that it is increased by that slight 3%, but if inflation is 7, I think it's 7.5, how are you going to come out? Again, if you decrease the budget for the compensation of employees, how are you going to come out when people want their increases, that they want year in and year out, and what you are owing for the previous years, and so on and so on? All those issues, how are you going to come out to address those issues if your budget is not inflation linked? CFO, if I was to say to you, is your budget proper? If you say yes, how are you going to demonstrate to us that it is proper? How is it proper? If you can just give clarity to us, so that we can have a good understanding of it. I think for now, let me stop there. And if you'd allow us, Acting DG, to actually forward some of the questions that we have, but in the interest of time, let us stop there for today. But we certainly shall forward some of the questions that may be left out for now. And also, the last one is the issue of the revision of names, you know, and ATP. That are not consistent with the naming in the threat plan, and that brings about confusion in some of the programs that you are referring to. If you can refer to page 36 of your APP and 45 of your threat plan, there is inconsistency in terms of naming some of the programs. Please attend to that, because it does create confusion. Lastly, the support of provinces that are not performing, like Limpopo. I know that this is a concurrent function, but at the end of the day, when a person says the Department of Education, national takes the flag, the ball comes back to your court. So how do you plan to support those provinces, really, like Limpopo, like KZN and the Eastern Cape in terms of ensuring that they deliver quality education and they are on top of things. Thank you very much, ADM, and I'm heading over to NDO.
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you to the honourable members. Clearly, you've been very attentive to the detail arising from your oversight visits, and I'm glad that there is a relationship between what you've seen and observed and what we are discussing here. Otherwise, we'd be discussing that academically, and I think that's the point Ms. Hutton is making without paying particular attention to the realities on the ground. Chairperson, if I could, with your permission, start with yours, because you came in at the end and you started in the beginning. So try to deal with those issues and then go from the bottom upwards. I'm sure colleagues wouldn't mind if I do that way there. It's not because any questions are less important than the other, but because you started and ended, and I think I'll do so. And just to indicate to you that after I've responded, I will invite the acting DG and his team to augment wherever possible. Now, Chair, you ask how is it that, how can we say that the budget is pro-poor? The budget is clearly pro-poor because it basically provides for opportunities in terms of education for those who are poor to attend low-fee schools. The fact that 8 out of 10 children in the country attend low-fee schools, the fact that the allocation of resources to quintiles 1, 2, and 3 is far higher than it is for quintile 4 and 5, or an independent school, is an indication of the fact that there is a bias. So basically, an independent school would probably get one-tenth of what a quintile 1, 2, and 3 school would receive. The fact that we distribute 55 million books on literacy and numeracy from grade 1 to grade 9 free of charge to every single child, the vast majority of whom are basically in quintile 1, 2, and 3 schools, is a clear indication that we are pro-poor. So in terms of how we allocate the resources, there is an obvious bias to the poor. The fact that in terms of your infrastructure investment itself, more than 90% of it goes to the poor for purposes of ensuring that we provide them with better infrastructure and environment conducive to learning, provide for the electricity and so forth. So I don't think there is a problem insofar as that is concerned. That could be clearly demonstrated. But I think what you are saying is that how do we speak in our presentation to the issues of equity? And maybe what we could ask the CFO to do is to give the committee a sense of expenditure trends and how they favor it in a much more direct way. So I don't have a difficulty with the question. I'm just saying that I know for a fact that it is poor, but the presentation certainly does not reflect on that clearly enough. With regard to the annual national assessment, I just want to give an assurance to colleagues that we have absolutely no intention of eliminating the annual national assessment. South Africa is the only country in the world that has done it on the scope that we've done it, where we've basically tested more than 7 million learners on literacy and numeracy from grade 1 to grade 6 and to grade 9. And last year, the grade 7 and 8 were also going to be tested. Unfortunately, because of the dispute with the unions, we were unable to proceed with it, notwithstanding the fact notwithstanding more than 20% had indeed written the NR, and we are busy consolidating the responses in order to see where the deficits lie. So the intention with regard to NR, firstly, and I think I should speak to that, is to say that we are absolutely clear about the fact that NR will continue. What will have to be discussed is really the content of NR and its frequency and its quality, so that we make sure that it's universally accepted, that it has an appropriate impact, and indeed what has happened, a task team has been set up, their work is indeed complete now, so it's basically the department is looking at the draft that they've provided for with suggestions in relation to frequency, in relation to quality, and we are saying and we are arguing that whatever we do in terms of NI and its assessment has to be internationally benchmarked. So that the level is pitched at the right high, high enough. We do believe that it is quite a huge demand to basically do so annually across all grades, and we might want to look at the exit points, your foundation phase, your intermediate phase, your senior high school. So that would give you good indications as to how we're progressing, but we would also have exemplars and so forth in between to guide our assessment so that we can have class-based assessment. So ENA has been a wonderful instrument utilized by districts, utilized by circuits, as you correctly pointed out, in terms of the performance of learners across the system. And ENA speaks to basically where the difference should be made, and indeed what we've seen from the ENA is that we are improving in the foundation phase. The challenges are more in the intermediate phase and certainly in the senior phase of high school, and therefore we would want to utilize that as an important instrument for assessment. The reduction comes in as a result of the fact that we were unable to do what we did, what we ought to have done as a result of the dispute. So that's not money that is going to be lost, it's money that's going to be utilized and made available for that. Treasury would obviously want to know about the frequency and about the scope of the ENA, and that would be determined on the final decision that has to, that will be taken. And indeed, what we would do then, and certainly we are obliged to do so, is once we have finality in terms of the structure of ENA for the future, we would have to consult with the committee to say, we've reflected on the task team's report, we've considered it, we've conversed, we've engaged experts, and here is our proposal. So we will come back to you in relation to that, but the assurance that we give to you is it is going to be an integral part of the system. Now, with regard to the second chance itself, it's very, very important. Chairperson, you know, last year we did a very bold and audacious thing. We allowed 62,000 learners, 65,000 learners, who would otherwise not have written their matric examinations to sit for the examination. Now, the policy has always been that you cannot fail more than once in a phase. And what schools were doing is they were retaining, keeping back these learners all the time. And the results were quite astounding. So if you are from the Northwest, you'd be very, very proud to say that, you know, from the progress learners, 59% of those that had sat for the examination had passed. You would be quite happy to hear that out of the 65,000 learners that had sat for the examination, remember these learners would not otherwise have sat for the examination, 22,000 had passed. You would be happy to hear that more than 4,000 had basically got bachelor's passes. So what we saw from that particular aspect is that given the opportunity, they would be able, they the potential to succeed. So you have that in the Northwest, and indeed, if you take the district that has performed best in it, it's in Free State, where basically they provided adequate support and learners had done extremely well. However, what he said that there is a reciprocal responsibility. When you progress learners, they should at least acquire a minimum threshold. You can't basically have 10% and then be expected to write the examination. The learners must attend school, must sit for the test, must be subject to class-based assessment. So there will be a reciprocal responsibility on that learner who is going to be allowed to sit for the examination on the basis of progression. Thirdly, the caregiver or the parent must undertake that he or she is going to basically support the initiatives of the school in relation to assisting and supporting the learner. And the fourth is there must be a plan within the school to ensure that a progression doesn't occur mechanically, but the adequate support is provided for that particular purpose. So it's an important lesson we learned last year. We improved on it. And one of the elements that we looked at last year, and in fact we do think we should carry forward, is you might have a situation where learners could write three subjects well, or write three subjects and do well in three, and write four when the supplementary examination, if we reschedule the supplementary examination for May, you might give the learner an opportunity to stagger the examination, three or four subjects in December and three during that period of time, and that learner would then be able to cope with the demands. So all that is being looked at very, very carefully and will be discussed at the Council of Education Ministers meeting. The difficulty is if you don't basically provide support and encourage and motivate them, these learners are going to be dropped out. And Chairperson, what is significant to note with regard to dropouts? As we're doing an analysis, we're working very closely with, and you're right, you asked the question, we're also asking the same question. You've got the TVET, and the TVET alone in 3 years, in 5 years, has increased by about 500,000. So many of the learners, because once you pass grade 9, you can go to a TVET college. Many of the learners have gone to TVET colleges. What happens, you know, what percentage of the cohort do they make up? What about those learners who have fallen pregnant and the incidence of pregnancy is high in some areas and have then returned to school? So we're doing some critical study in terms of getting a better sense of the dropout and to basically track our learners. Now that is linked to a very important element, and it is part of our APP, is our LURIS. We've done 11 million of our learners already, and I think within the next 6 months to a year, we would have tracked every single learner and be able to follow that learner. We would then be using the web base. You know, we've got our, South African schools, as we said, but we want to make it web-based. And the reason for wanting us to make it web-based is to answer the questions that you are raising. Absenteeism. We can be able to determine in real time whether a teacher is at work or not at work. Dissemination of exemplars, it can happen in real time. There would be an element of interactivity, there would be an element of management of data, and co-curriculum coverage, very, very important. To find out, you could know exactly what is happening in terms of curriculum coverage. So by basically taking the same system that we have, but making it web-based, we could have a huge, huge difference. The districts that have performed well in Gauteng, in the Western Cape, and parts of the Free State and the Northwest, are districts that rely on data. They rely on data not on grade 12, but across the system. So where circuit managers, as you correctly point out, are able to oversee, and the district directors are able to say, here are the problems, here are the intervention that we can make, so they are able to track the performance of the learners. So what we are saying to you is that your observation and the questions that you raise are important, and these are the hard questions that we are also asking. Now, with regard to the profiling of educators, I think it's perhaps the biggest challenge that we face. And one of the difficulties that we've had is that there was never a profile of our educators in the past. Now, the good news is we've already started that particular process, and I think we've done almost more than 50% of the country's profiles, where we've got the teacher, his or her qualifications, his or her skills, and where the teacher has been teaching and what the teacher has been teaching. And what we want to do is be able to utilize that profile against the needs, in other words, what the school is offering in terms of its timetable, and make sure that there is a match, that we match the skills, the competencies with the subject that is being taught. So thank you for doing that. Now, you know, we at times forget that the timetable itself is an important instrument. And clearly, the department is very, very clear about it. It makes sure that forms part of its efficiency in terms of training. But if you can't manage a timetable in a school, the school system is not going to be functional, it's not going to be effective. Because your timetable determines who's going to be teaching what, for how long. It basically sets out your program, your operational plan on a day-to-day basis. And timetabling becomes an important skill that all educators must have, and indeed we do believe they should have it. But we've made it so easy. We've basically, in the National Curriculum Assessment Policy Statement, allowed every educator to know what is going to be taught in terms of its content, when it's going to be taught and for how long, and how much you assess that knowledge. So basically, I think educators are quite spoiled. But what it does for us is at any point in time, we can go into a class and we could say, well, where are you now, or what are you teaching? And we would know that in terms of the coverage of the curriculum itself, that teacher should have taught this particular subject at this particular time. Now, we've done that in order to ensure that we are able to oversee and monitor this particular process. So as we go to a web-based system, we are able to link all these things in terms of that particular initiative that we've carried out. Chair, your suggestion or your proposal with regard regard to distribution of educators is linked to the profiling of the teaching teachers, and indeed we are supporting what you are saying. We don't have any different view other than what you have put forward over here. And your supply and management of educators is important. But there's a reality in terms of your frontal lishak. It's not only about mathematics and science. It's about basically providing for the needs of schools. We know that we require strong, skilled teachers in the foundation phase. We know we need teachers who are good in languages, including English and the indigenous African languages. We know we certainly need many educators for mathematics, science, and technology, and also in economics and accountancy. So those are important elements. But I think the point that you made the last time, and the point that you and colleagues are making today, is that we tend often to underestimate the value and importance of language across the curriculum. That if you don't have the command of the language, whether you're teaching mathematics or economics or history, the learner is going to be at a disadvantage. So in other words, the teacher must have that particular skill. For that reason, in terms of the National Curriculum Assessment Policy Statement, we have used English across the curriculum. In other words, it's a special skill that has to be taught over there, and I think it's important. But talking of which, Chairperson, you spoke also about the element of practicality. We have already been in conference, and we're going to say to you that we are going to be presenting at a later stage of operational plans of all those issues that you've raised, including your Funza Lushaka, including your professional development, including your promotion of mathematics and science, and the promotion of indigenous languages and so forth. That's going to come part of the operational plan. That is not what we've been discussed here, but the operation plan is being finalized in order to give effect to all those concerns that you are raising over here. Now take the issue that you've raised, Chairperson, and that's the issue of your school, the circuit inspectors and your school principals. Right. Now, if you look at your plan, it will tell you that what we are proposing in terms of our plan is that all principals must be subject to performance agreements, they must be competent, they must be skilled. We basically have draft legislation where we are saying that you cannot become a principal unless you have the experience, the qualification, and the competency. That is very, very critical. So basically, those would be the requirement, because the principal is functionally responsible for the professional management of the school, must have skills in the implementation of the curriculum, in terms of fiscal management, in terms of interaction with educators, democratic practices, in terms of interaction with learners and the community. Those are some of the things, and must be a good communicator. Now, if the principal doesn't have those elements, those skills, you basically really rendering a school useless or non-functional, and therefore it is part of our APP, but it's also going to be part of our legislative scheme, and we give you that assurance, and indeed all political parties seem to be happy about the fact that we are making those demands in terms of how a principal should function. Gauteng, the Western Cape, have performance managements with their principals. There's nothing preventing other provinces from doing so. Indeed, we are promoting that happens. As we speak right now in the ELRC, there is a QMS system that has basically to be signed by the biggest union, but there's a principal agreement that all principals and heads of department would be subject to performance agreements. So that has been finalized and negotiated, and we do hope we see the light of day there. Now, Chair, you've also spoken about the importance of districts. You cannot be more correct than that. Because what we've discovered in these past 7 years, and there are problems and challenges that we have, but the stability that we have in the system of education is largely attributable to the fact that we have good district managers. And you see, good district, that's why we give special awards of excellence to district managers. Because they make a huge difference over there. And if you look at where the performance is good in a district, look at the district manager and you'll find the answer is there with the district manager and the circuit managers working within that particular district. There's a good correlation between the two of them and a link with the schools in a very, very direct way. Now, in the Eastern Cape, and this is part of your oversight, so we're telling you that you'll see that in the operational plan. We've already got a commitment. Indeed, we are working on the basis that Eastern Cape doesn't have 23 districts now. It has?
Yes. 12.
from 23, we've already reduced it to 12. In terms of furniture that you raise over there, and one of the colleagues has read us, Ms. Lamania, has raised the issue of furniture. We have 12 dedicated people from the Department of Basic Education there that are permanently based in the Cape Town, in the Eastern Cape, to do the assessment, the audit of furniture in each and every school. We have 24 people, and we finalized the plan. Deputy Minister was there. We took them to task. The process has already started. We've already completed, I think, 1,620 was the last count that I had, schools, in terms of the assessment. So each and every class and each and every school's furniture needs are being checked. And as we speak to you right now, we have requisitioned more than 150 from the National Department, 150 items of furniture for schools from the National Department. So what I'm saying to you, we cannot, it's an affront to the dignity of our children if they have to stand. Mm-hmm. I mean, how do you defend it? You can't. It's a violation of the dignity and the rights. So what we're saying, there's no argument about it. Don't give us academic things. It is what you are saying. What are the practical realities that you are going to be speaking to in the Eastern Cape? But as we speak about these practical realities, we can't now say ICT must come afterwards. I disagree with Mr. Hutton. ICT must come now. You know, just 5 years ago, it's not a long time. In fact, it's about 4 years ago. The Eastern Cape, for administration purposes, had only 18% connectivity, 1-8. Right now, it has 96% connectivity. Because we realize that without ICT, we're not going to be able to get the data, we're not going to get information, how are we going to carry distances, you've got to take a circular, you've got to send a person by vehicle to deliver it from place to place. Things have indeed changed. And as we're working hard in Eastern Cape, just think about it, 6 years ago when the whole system collapsed, there was no nutrition being provided to learners. Today in the country, the flagship program of the National Nutrition Scheme is in the Eastern Cape. Utensils are being provided, preparation areas, training has taken place for every one of the centers, and more than 50,000 women have been empowered to provide nutrition for our children. Now, what I'm saying is a disaster can be turned into triumph. The question that was asked, what is the problem in the Eastern Cape? Now, you know, we had previously, and I'm speaking to you very frankly and honestly, previously the problem in the Eastern Cape was that there were the political principles, the MECs of education were being changed. You had 3 for every 5 years. Mm-hmm. Now we've got the same MEC, but the HODs are being changed. Mm-hmm. We will now cost 1 in the past 6 years. Now, how can you get stability when your HOD is being changed? And we've spoken to the Premier about it. We just don't speak to the MEC. We've spoken to the Premier about it. And we say, no, this has to be addressed. And to the extent, and I do believe, once we have permanency, we have an acting HOD, once we have permanency there, we can bring about a change. But in the meantime, we are working extremely hard. I've given you the example of furniture. But there are other teams that are helping in other elements with regards to human resources and so forth. 2 years ago, there was more than 140 pending cases of discipline. Now there's only 6. So somebody asked, what about litigation? What about the law cases? You know, the frequency of litigation was so huge. Compared, Eastern Cape had more than 1,500 cases compared to the 200-something in the rest of the country. We have sent, and they are still there, 2 dedicated lawyers to deal with this matter. And indeed, they are dealing with these matters, and the results are astounding. Because their task is just to deal with the issues of litigation, resolve matters that can be resolved, deal with the issues of paia where they ask for information and respond to it. But then, you know, you have these issues of mergers. And thankfully, my cousin, my colleague, who's saying we are from the same account. Yeah. He brings a good example, and I thought either one of you had brought it, to say, why is it that Gauteng has more schools than KwaZulu-Natal, more learners than KwaZulu-Natal, but KwaZulu-Natal has more schools than Gauteng, and the Eastern Cape has almost twice the number of schools? That's the reality. If you go to the Eastern Cape and you count the number of schools that have less than 135 learners, which is a norm, you take away another 2,400 schools. Another 2,400 schools. Yet, there are people who are taking advantage. We've just had litigation, talking about litigation. We have a case where a person who has 2 children, out of 3 children in that school, is now suing the department. for clothing school. School of 3 children. Second school with 9 children. Third school with 11 children, and the other school with 23 children. So 4 schools, and you read the report in the newspaper, it speaks about the processes and everything else, but not one word to say that these 4 schools collectively have less than 50 children. So rationalization and mergers have to take place. We were there just 2 weeks ago. 104 schools are formally now going to be have been gazetted for closure, and they are busy with another 2,000 schools. But we are absolutely clear that it cannot be happening without due process, consultation, alternatives, transport, hostels, and a range of things that have to be dealt with. You can't just mechanically close the school because there are too few learners, but you haven't provided adequate alternatives in terms of transport otherwise. So we thought we'd share that with you in relation to that there. We then go to Ms. Hutton with the MAS schools, and I thought Palestinians was there. I'm going now from the bottom upwards, so your MAS schools, you know, 10 years ago, there were MAS schools in Limpopo, there were MAS schools in KwaZulu-Natal, there were MAS schools in the Northwest, there were MAS schools in the Free State. Today, it's not a phenomenon in any of those places, but in the Eastern Cape. And we think we are eliminating that. We have to eliminate that phenomenon, but we must do so in a clever way. There's got to be proper planning, because from the schools that have the ACD program, we've realized, and here's a good doctor, he will tell you, that if we had proceeded, at least 50 of those ACD schools that were planned for new schools in the Eastern Cape would have been non-viable schools that had to be closed. And we're going through the exercise with the infrastructure team of both the national department and the provincial department to say that when we put up a school, the school must respond to the needs of that particular community. And as we look at the number of primary schools we are putting up, what about the high schools? What about the hospitals that you have raised, which is important? So the planning, for the first time, and I'm saying that to you, for the first time I can say with a reasonable degree of certainty, and Mr. Kojana was with me there, that the Eastern Cape has now the capacity. It has an engineer, it has an architect, it has a quantity surveyor, that have done a scoping of the entire provinces in terms of its needs. And what we're doing is we're layering our national plans with the provincial plans to say, how do we move forward? So the 55 schools that have been planned by the national department for this coming financial year has been done in consultation with the expertise of the provinces to ensure that we are basically reading from the same page and we can deal with the matter quite appropriately. Now, you see, ICT, Mr. Hutton, basically would make it possible for us to monitor the attendance of those educators, because you can use biometrics for that particular purpose. You can get the information in real time, and we are going to move in that direction. We are not going to hold back. Our intention basically is to have an efficient system out there, and you can't have learned educators. There's absolutely no excuse for an educator to leave at 11 o'clock or to be absent 4 days in a month. There's absolutely no excuse. It's non-negotiable, and I do believe there should be consequence management in terms thereof. Now, the issues of LTSM in the Eastern Cape in particular was raised by more than one of our members. Now, Chair, this is very, very interesting. And I want you to listen to this. We worked very closely with Treasury, and we said, you know, through centralized procurement, we would be able to save millions of rand. And indeed, we have saved millions of rand. So when we save money for a province through central procurement, the money doesn't go to the national department. It stays with the province. In other words, that is their saving, which they could utilize for other purposes. The Eastern Cape was going to be part of that program. Gauteng was part of it. The Western Cape was part of it, just in terms of stationery. And Eastern Cape decided to go on its own. The result is what you're talking about. These Casio calculators, which are not scientific calculators, they've paid much more than the other provinces have done, and we're saying we're going to make an intervention. We're not going to allow that to happen again. It cannot be that you are denying the children of the Eastern Cape the right to have some equipment and stationery that is of a sound quality, and indeed that is the intervention that we will make. So we want to give you that assurance, but we have provided them with the opportunity, and I know, you know, we've put a lot of energy into these cases. Members, we have been there. It's not like we go there once in 6 months. We are on, I wish people would come and sit in one of the meetings, just one of the meetings, and then I think you'd have a different view of oversight. You see oversight at work in quite a different way. It is not pleasant as it is right here, I can assure you, Chairperson. Chairperson, then the issue of what I think I've spoken about, the NR and the trade unions with regard to that, and I said it will be done. The LTSM, basically, now you see the retrieval system is another thing. You can't now, you can't now ask a department to buy new books for a cohort. The lifespan of a textbook is 5 years. At minimum, it's 3 years. But it's 5 years. 80% is basically what you say you will be able to retrieve, and 20% is what you would talk about. We've just got a new National Curriculum Assessment Policy. There are new textbooks there. We cannot expect learners now to say, well, throw your textbooks and schools must buy again. How do we manage the retrieval system? And HESCOM is busy with the norms for the retrieval system, but to create incentives and rewards. So schools that are able to retrieve more than so-and-so, such amount of textbooks percentage, would be getting a reward. So they would have more resources allocated to them. So that would encourage them to do so in a much more meaningful way. Why is it that it was working in the Western Cape? Why is it that it's working in Gauteng and the Northwest and in Free State, but it's not working in the Eastern Cape? Now, you can't say that the parents are different. It means that the management, and this is what you say, consequent management, the management, the system itself, the HR, has to be dealt with very, very seriously. And we do believe that the consequence management is critical and necessary for that with regard to text. So, now, the issues about curriculum for the lower grades, you know, it's actually it's a bit of a difficult situation. The NDP says we must basically, National Development Plan says we must provide 2 years of preschool. Department of Education, has been entrusted with the responsibility of grade R levels. Just 6 years ago, less than 60% of your educators had a level 4 qualification. There's my degree, she will tell you now. More than 95% of your practitioners have a level 4. About 35% have a level 5. And about 30% have a level 6. Am I more or less right? I have learned radio notes. More or less. But I'm saying, our aspiration is to ensure that every practitioner has a level 6 minimum because of the responsibility that she or he has in relation to that 5-year-old child. Similarly, we want to basically up the NCA from 0 to 4. We never had a curriculum for grade R. We now have a curriculum. Each grade R learner receives 4 books delivered to him or her free of charge. Every year, 4 books. Right. Grade R learners, so I'm saying that the practitioners, at one stage we have a practitioner pay 1,000 rand, one place 1,500, another place 3,000 in the other. We have a minimum stipend nationally now of 5,000. And we're saying that is not enough. What we can do, and what we're working towards, is once they have a level 6 qualification, they can be integrated into the system itself and they can become true professionals. Now, we will continue supporting the Department of Social Development in relation to the training and in relation to the curriculum. And for the first time in the history of our country, we do have a curriculum which we've developed in collaboration with social development of 0 to grade 4. But it's a huge task because our ability to supervise and oversee that particular process is extremely difficult. We stretch anyway with more than 875,000 grade R learners in the system itself. But we are working very, very closely with that there. So I just want to tell you that we're doing whatever we can, and if you look at the progress that we've made, I think you'll be quite happy and you'll be quite proud to say at least our children are receiving preschool learning and teaching. Then the issue, with regard to the issues of cost of containment. How does it work? You will see it out here. What Treasury said is that we have to have austerity measures, and we have to basically make sure that if we have resources and you do not utilize the resources, we're going to take it away from you. But it doesn't mean that we're going to take it from you and then going to deprive those communities of the opportunity to receive the benefit of it. So in the Eastern Cape, they've taken away 600 million of the infrastructure. But the undertaking that we have from Treasury is that they will bring it back to the Eastern Cape when they are ready. We're not going to give you money if you can't spend it. So we say proper planning and management, and then you get your money. So it's taken away, but it's not taken away permanently. So similarly, where there are elements where we've not utilized the money sufficiently or adequately, we take it to a program that is much more beneficial, much more optimal. So in a sense, there is this containment, so that there's no wasteful, you've got to do more with less because of the general economy itself. But thank you for making this point. The poor project management has been the biggest problem. I gave you the example of the Eastern Cape in terms of its capacity for infrastructure. I gave you another example, Chairperson, of the issues about your procurement of your stationery and your textbooks. So that there, and there must be consequences for that there, and this is where we're saying where there are difficulties, the Treasury is working very closely with the Department of Basic Education to ensure that we provide capacity and develop sustained capacity within provinces. The plans, I can assure you, have been aligned with the NDP. So all the Department of Basic Education's plans are aligned with the NDP and the 10-point plan of the ruling party, which basically, all three plans almost speak to each other in a way, so there's no problem at all there. We then go down to the challenges in the Eastern Cape, and I've spoken to Edmé about the leadership in the Eastern Cape. The infrastructure, we've spoken about that. The furniture, I've spoken about that, so I'm not going to repeat that there. And I'm coming to an end because I have... right. Disparities, one of the school. Disparities, I'll explain to you what's happening there. The Eastern Cape is on course to closing more than 2,000 schools that are non-viable. You know, there are schools with 10 levels, there are schools with 15 levels. And it just doesn't make sense. But obviously, as you do that, you must be sensitive to the fact that you've got to provide alternatives, you've got to provide transport, and certainly, in my view, and Free State does it extremely well, and followed by the Northwest, that they've established very, very good hospitals. So if you go to California, yeah. You would find a school, a high school, that delivers more than 95% in terms of its pass rate, and at least 60% of those are bachelor's pass. Mm-hmm. And you see a beautiful hospital there. But that hospital doesn't accommodate only those high school kids. It accommodates kids for two other schools. So you've got three schools accommodated in one hospital attached to one school, and then what happens is the bus transports the other learners, does that, and comes back. So they save on transport, they provide accommodation, and it does extremely well. And I think the Eastern Cape can learn from that. I think the issue that has been made by yourself with regard to the practical element of teaching is there, and we've spoken to higher education and training to say, it's just not about academic knowledge and qualifications, it's about real exposure, and we want to have more practical exposure of educators in terms of what they teach. So you've got your situation here of your 1 year, right? So I've got a BSc degree. Now we can offer you a postgraduate certificate education, a PGCE. That will enable you to teach. In my opinion, that would be adequate. You see, I can go to any class or any university now and I can teach, and I'm a lawyer. But I did a postgraduate certificate in higher education and training. So I can lecture at any place. And I'm telling you, I did it for 1 year. So as a trained lawyer, I was able to do an education qualification. And believe you me, it is sufficient to do that. Out of 65 people, I was the only non-lecturer I was the only non-lecturer, and only 12 of us passed at the end of the year. And that was at the University of Pretoria. So I'm saying to you, if it's structured the right way, it could be very, very useful to have qualified people. But what you are saying, and where I agree with you, is if it contains and adds to it a practical element of teaching, it would really strengthen that there. And we've already made that recommendation to the university to say, even in your PGT, please include the practical element. So we're not disagreeing with you, we are agreeing with you, but at least we could draw people with appropriate qualifications there. Now, I should finish now, right? I think
we've answered almost all our questions. You have answered almost all our questions, even those that were supposed to be answered by the acting teacher. You've already answered, but maybe I'm going to give you just a minute to wind
up. To close up, chairperson. I think there were so many questions that were being asked that we had to answer those there. But the operational plans will basically provide you with the detail, and I think that would be very, very useful. And I think it's important that at least you hear the words of the trainer DG and his team, just to add to what I've done. All that I'm giving you is not my intelligence, it's from these people here. They provide me with information, and I respond on their behalf. Thank you very much.
I want to commend you to the DM we have done justice. If they have to add it to because issues that maybe they can address through written responses, if we agree to that. But I will allow the CFO to respond to the issues because we're looking also at the budget just for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. We've noted the comments about linking the budget to activities in the presentation, so for the future presentations we'll do that. And then there was a question about reducing the allocation for ANA. This was the reductions that were done through Treasury and Parliament directives because departments were asked to cut a certain amount. Now this was done with in conjunction with a national treasurer. It's not necessarily that the department decided just to cut ANA. Maybe the relevant branch could maybe give more information, but I would suspect it also had to do with what happened last year with the ANA allocation. And then reduction of compensation of employees. This one also was cut by National Treasurer. It's not the department that decided to cut on the compensation of employees. And then the proposed Deputy Minister answered, I don't know if I should give the figures as the chairperson or the Deputy Minister was saying.
The figures we can actually give to us in the written response.
Okay, we'll do that. And the other two areas, I think the Deputy Minister answered them. Thank you.
Thank you. I think this is just a way to end off and close.
No, thank you very much, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. And thank you very much for the guidance. I think that the Prime Minister has responded to the questions, but I think for on the side of the guidance, it allows us to strengthen our APP. And it allows us to see how best do we improve on our reporting and to the select committee, because at the level of the select committee we need to provide a provincial specifics. And I think that guidance is really welcomed, because give us time when we go back to say how best do we align. But secondly, to indicate our commitment to constantly provide you with the progress updates on the oversight. You recall that we provided you with a report on the 17th of February. What we intend to continuously provide you with a report, because as I'm here today, yesterday I was in Peter Maritzburg, and there's a team that is in the Eastern Cape, and there's a team that is in Limpopo. So we are stretched over, and the minister is actually here. I think she will be landing in PE to deal with the PE issue. over and above us dealing with the provincial dynamics in the province. I think that the Deputy Minister could have elaborated much more on the specifics around what is it that we're doing in the province. But I think more is that even in on those oversized responses, we'll be able to deal with the specific questions which we're interested in, especially if you talk about the Bamba School, that they will be able to provide you in the return responses that will be provided to you. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
I could see that has got quite a couple of responses they had noted, but please make a submission in the written form. I think we've come to the end of our engagement with the Department of Basic Education. I want to thank you very much on behalf of the Select Committee, the responses that have been given, particularly by the